This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can. Ugh.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural, A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Is the lacrosse coach. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck, wasn't it?
Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck, yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
It's the last hurrah, do it again. The rascal king behind the bars, all the one in front of them. Last hurrah,
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And we are now post-SummerSlam, a show I felt like we were talking about for months and months and months and months and months and weeks and weeks on all these shows. And it happened. It was like one of those things where you keep talking about maybe something happening, but you don't actually think it will, and then it does, and it's a nice surprise. So that's where we're at. And speaking of nice surprises, I have a couple of guys with me. First off, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 328 of Place to Be Podcast. And it does seem amazing with all of the specials we've done over the last few weeks. And, of course, main event, Kevin Kelly show, all this. Again, all the specials and wrapping up with the reaction cast last night. It seems like SummerSlam is like WrestleMania weekend, only it seemed like it was 10 times as long. But we finally got to the end. Some things happened last night that people like, some people don't like. But that's why we talk about it. So,
yep, and we got a lot to talk about. And we got a couple things we're going to do tonight. So first, we're going to recap the show that was last night, SummerSlam 2014, because obviously it was a pretty big one. We got a lot to talk about. And then we're going to get into the mail like we usually do when this guy is with us. And that's our very special guest, a good friend of Place to Be. And a contributor to PlaceToBeNation.com, Mr. Scott Keith. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good, thanks. I'm here with my own PIC, my partner and cat.
Very good. Speaking of SummerSlam, guys, I thought I'd quickly just kind of catch you up on everything at PlaceToBeNation.com SummerSlam related, because there's a lot of it. So we had our reaction podcast that was last night, right after the show ended. Our buddy Will from PWO and yourself, Scott, and Dylan from Wrestling Culture and Chris Zellner got together and recap the show right after it happened. So pretty good couple hours there. You guys went deep into the night talking about show. So that's posted now. You also have our Scott Keith rant is up there, the Smock rant. He did that right after the show last night. We have SummerSlam 2014 live blog if you want to kind of relive the show as it was happening. We had a great mix and gaggle of staff members doing that. We had our SummerSlam Rewind series. There's still one more to come this week, but four in the book, Scott. The newest one was SummerSlam 1992 with me, Steve Willey, and Steve Carino joined us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting in his take on an older show, and he had some really cool road stories about Sensational Sherry and a couple other guys on there.
Nice.
So if you like Carino and his show or just enjoy Steve Carino in general or want to hear about SummerSlam 92, I recommend checking that one out. We had The Cowboy Goes to Class, looked at SummerSlam 1999. Of course, as Roger Moore sets, we had a great piece by Andrew Reich last week called The In-Betweener, looking at different transitional champions, of course, which John Cena is now the latest to do so. and he looks at basically the role of that type of performer throughout the history of the promotion. So that's really the main crux of your SummerSlam stuff. There's other great pieces up there since we last talked. You have episode 16 of the Steve Corino Show. We talked to Corey Hollis, Ring of Honor star. Also had the Seinfeld rewatch continuing on. We are through season one into season two, going strong. The next one will be up on Tuesday, episode two of season two, The Pony Remark. Me, Aaron George, Andrew Flanagan, Jordan Duncan are doing that. And, of course, we must push on with our Character Tournament World Cup Greatest TV Characters. We are just about at the end of round two. That ends on Tuesday. You'll have the rest of the week to vote, and then round three will begin next week. So there's some really close matchups still up there, some really interesting ones. Again, the last poll of round two will go up tomorrow, and then we'll go ahead and move forward to round three in a week. So get your votes in there, PlaceToBeNation.com, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Place Number 2 Be Nation at Twitter, and info@PlaceToBeNation.com if you want to send us a sample and apply to write for the site. All right, so that's out of the way. Why don't we head to last night, guys? And instead of going match by match, because you can read our thoughts, or Scott, Keith, you can read your thoughts on your Smark rant, and Chris Colo, you can hear you on the reaction. So I don't think we need to go match by match, thought by thought. So what we'll do is I'm going to throw out some categories that we can talk about, and then maybe we'll just look at the overall impact of the show as a whole. So we'll start with you, Keith. What was your match of the night?
Well, I think clearly Brock Lesnar kicking the shit out of John Cena was match of the night. It was kind of a weird show in that it was a really good, but there was nothing I would consider to be like any kind of classic match or, you know,
right,
or, you know, classic technically worked match or anything like that. Like everything I had was, you know, 3 stars or so like that. But yeah, no, I was just, that was a very, very unexpected and enjoyable 16 minutes of my life watching John Cena just get completely destroyed by the monster like that.
And I was curious about your thoughts on the structure of the match, because I saw some people and some in our own group here were saying they thought it was boring, that he could have done more than, you know, 16 German suplexes, but I loved it. I'm not a Cena hater, but I thought it was exactly what was needed. And I feel like that's what we've all been asking for weeks and weeks here, is Brock Lesnar basically squash this guy and put him over as a complete monster. We've seen John Cena go toe-to-toe with him, but this is, I thought, how the match had to be.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, this is what we've been waiting for since he debuted at Extreme Rules. That's what everybody thought it should have been at that point, was Brock Lesnar plowing through him like a bulldozer, basically. I mean, so I've been harping on it in my rant in my Sporting News column before, but clearly Rocky III is the greatest movie ever made, and if you're going to steal from it, then nothing but good things can happen. So Brock Lesnar is clearly Clubber Lang here.
If they do go, hopefully he gives a better Hall of Fame speech, if they do go with the Rocky III storyline, when is an acceptable time to you to complete that story, which would be John Cena coming back, training with Apollo, and then winning the title back?
I kind of get the feeling that it's going to be sooner rather than later, just because they don't want to have the title, you know, floating around in limbo off at the Minnesota farm while he's punching grizzly bears with his bare hands and everything like that. I mean, I feel like they do want to have the title defended on the road. So, I mean, because they want to pop the big rating for Night of Champions, it does seem like it'll be a quick turnaround going back to Cena if I had to take a stab in the dark. But, I mean, who knows what's going on in Raw right now, because I don't have access to it and don't care anyway. But, I mean, at the latest, probably like, you know, Hell in a Cell, I'd say, would be the...
Man, I'd be disappointed if it's anything sooner than Mania. I just, to put him over like that and then have Cena come back 5 weeks later and win would just feel like a complete wasted opportunity. Like, I feel like it's rare that you get a heel this strong and this believable. I mean, I think like a year reign wouldn't be enough for this guy at this point. See, this is where I think, as much as I like Dolph Ziggler, I feel like if they had a strong secondary champion that could carry the house shows, and I mean, can't John Cena carry house shows alone? Like, do they really need title matches? Like, isn't maybe like a John Cena stipulation feud with someone? Wouldn't that be enough?
I think actually a John Cena Rusev feud would be enough if it was handled properly. But I mean, I'm just thinking of the mindset that they're typically in when they're lining these things up, and that always seems to be the way. That's why they desperately had to get the title onto Cena after Daniel Bryan was stripped of it, for instance, right? Because he couldn't do house shows without the title on top.
Well, see, to me that was a little bit different, because Bryan being injured, you don't know when he's coming back, when the title... I mean, this is, you can still do a storyline where Brock Lesnar is a dominant champion, just not on the road. You could even do like Super Friends matches at house shows to draw, like Cena and Reigns, never teams before kind of thing. Against like Orton, even may Triple H comes back into action just for house shows for a while or something like that to pick up the slack. What do you think, Scott?
The first thing I want to mention about the match, you know, I've kind of softened my stance on Cena over the last couple years. I didn't really say this in the recap last night because it didn't really hit me until today. Name me one. Now, John Cena is in that rarefied air. He's in that Hogan, Rock, Austin, you know, Shawn, Brett, that rarefied air. Name me any of them. Any of them would have done what Cena did for Brock last night. Zip.
Could you say Hogan did it?
Yeah, Hogan already did it, I gotta say. Yeah.
Goldberg?
Hogan in his prime have done it?
He did it for Goldberg.
Yeah, not in his prime. I mean, it's I don't know if it's a stretch to say that Cena's in his prime anymore, though. Like,
right. Well, he's still treated like he's in his prime.
So was Hogan in 98. I mean, he was treated like he was in his prime.
Yeah, WCW was a piece of crap at that point. But I wouldn't even call that. But remember, they had run-ins, and there was so much other gunk in that match.
Yeah.
Brock went in last night against the face of this company and beat the crap out of him,
yeah.
Period.
No, you're right. And I mean, Cena got two offensive spots in.
He got his two hero pushes, and I mean, could we effectively say that he pretty much no-sold? Well, I wouldn't say no-sold, but he pretty much squashed the STF, pretty much. I mean...
Oh, it was a squash, absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
And the zombie sit-up was a nice touch, too, which was like...
Yes.
Where yeah, he was laughing at his comeback. I mean,
well, that was a taunt. And that's all. Yeah. I think that was also a taunt to us as fans who didn't like the streak broken, telling everybody... Remember that back in April?
Well, so let me ask you this, Scott, because you were... Weren't you one of the guys that was kind of against Brock having been the guy to break the streak?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it worth it now to get to this point? Like, I mean, that was awesome last
yeah.
night.
I
feel like they paid off on it, you know?
Yeah, they did. They did. I think that, but I think that, and we can talk about this ad nauseum. If you look ahead between now and WrestleMania 31, the only two pay-per-views I could see them getting away with him not being at is probably Hell in a Cell. And probably TLC. He has to be at Night of Champions because that's
yeah,
the show.
I mean, that's an absolute. Well, he'll even be beyond that, that's the renewal show. So,
yeah,
I mean, he's going to be there.
Yeah, he'll be at Survivor Series because that's a big four. He'll be at the Rumble. Elimination Chamber is a weird situation because think about it now. Now we only have one belt.
Yeah, I don't think he has to be there, though. I think three, if he's on three out of the six, I think you're okay.
Well, here's the thing. Well, yes, I think that's fine, too. But... Now that you have a Rumble, now you're back to one belt. The Rumble is back to being the only number one contender. What, unless you don't have a chamber match, you kind of need him because what's a chamber for then?
Whatever.
So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it in February. They could change it up and go back to No Way Out anyway because they can do whatever they want. But it was the best way of going about it. I mean, it's if you're going to go this path, last night was the way to pull the trigger. We had no shenanigans. It was beat the tar out of them. Take the two belts, cackle, and leave. There was nothing you were going to have happen last night to make that any better.
All right, so Keith, we've seen... Sorry, Scott.
No, that was my point. I'm done.
Okay. So we've seen all the rumors that were out there today. Vince wants The Rock to be the guy to fight Brock Lesnar at Mania. Triple H wants Roman Reigns, whether these are legit rumors or not. Who, to you, is the guy that should do it? And who would be believable? Because I see Daniel Bryan's name get bandied about... And I love Daniel Bryan. Is it believable to have a guy like Daniel Bryan beat Brock Lesnar after what we saw last night?
It's really tough, especially with the neck injury. They might be. I mean, I'm pretty sure Roman Reigns is the guy who's going to end up in that spot. I don't know if they hadn't blown it so badly with Batista. I would say he would be a contender for somebody who could storm in as the big guy. I say maybe if they drive a dump truck full of money up to CM Punk's house.
That's my thought. Is the guy?
You know, like he. Because, you know, he almost beat him at SummerSlam last year, right? So, I mean, and that would be a big return.
So what about Triple H is so desperate because Brock, you know, he was desperate to get the belt off Cena, so he turned to Brock, and now Brock screws him and says, F you, I'm leaving with the belt. I don't care if you need me for ratings, I don't give a shit. I hate you. See ya. And Triple H has to start going and finding all these guys that he never thought he'd have to ask to help him get the belt back. And he ends up bringing Punk back, and that's how you get him back in the promotion after everything that happened.
Yeah, I mean, and that would be kind of an interesting twist on the storyline as well. It was with the actually going through with the holding the belt hostage
right.
kind of deal, where you're making it part of the story that, you know, that the belt is not being defended and people are freaking out about it and Triple H is, you know, recruiting all these guys and maybe, I don't know, turning the authority babyface or something in the process because, you know, they're trying
you end up turning,
they're fighting for the WWE, right. trying to, you know, get that belt back and, And, you know, and Brock just wants to, you know, Brock can openly say he wants to go back to UFC and take it there or something like that. You know?
Or just say, pay me. Pay me and I'll come back.
Yeah, exactly.
That's about it. And they, they even show Triple H, like, giving her a briefcase of money and then Brock just leaves. You know, something. Or they could even do what I thought they may have done last night. They could also do is Brock says, okay, if you pay me, you know, $5 million, I'll come lay down for Seth Rollins. You can cash in. So they pay him. He lays down. Rollins comes in. Brock gets up, laughs, and beats the shit out of Rollins. And now your contract's, now your briefcase is eradicated, too. So now Brock really has no reason to show up and get beat.
Boy, let me tell you, I would not want to be Seth Rollins right about now.
Like, no, it's a tough spot to be.
There's like, there's, you know, I mean, obviously it's there's gifts going all around Facebook now about it, but yeah, basically, no, that is the least desirable Money in the Bank briefcase to have in history.
Even more than if you were just Damian Sandow.
More than Damian Sandow. Yes.
All right. So, what was your surprise of the night? Anything? Catch you off guard.
Yeah, I think Stephanie Brie Bella was still kind of a terribly worked match, but I was surprised that at how entertaining Stephanie was in her role.
Yeah,
like I knew she's been an effective heel on the mic and in her mannerisms and stuff leading up to it, but I mean, like, she was out there carrying Brie on her back for that. It was kind of awesome to see, actually.
Yeah, I mean, she has been really good in the role, and the Steph shirt, like the Daniel Bryan Yes shirt, is pretty great.
I'm tempted to buy it.
Red Dazzle the Dominatrix gear. Nikki, unfortunately, is so awful that she telegraphed the whole thing because she looked nervous as hell coming down there. And you could see it really coming from a mile away that she was going to turn on Brie. So now they're going to go off and feud. And Steph still hasn't quite got her comeuppance yet. So that story's still open for someday. Maybe they'll have her and Paul Heyman in an arm wrestling contest or something. Scott, what was your kind of surprise of the night?
Dolph Ziggler winning.
Yeah, that was a big one.
To be honest with you. Although I still, like I said last night on the recap, I consider Miz. I think the best part of Miz's storyline is it's almost unintentional that he's pretending to be Rock 2003. It's almost like low rent Rock 2003, and that's the storyline. He's pretending to be a star when we all know he really isn't. Whether WWE's doing that on purpose, nobody cares. we're going to do whatever we want with what they give us. So
right.
That was a big shock, and I'm glad he won. Maybe this leads to a renewed push. Any other surprises? Paige winning was a little bit of a surprise, but not really. Nah, I mean, that DDT, I'm surprised AJ's not dead.
Yeah, that was
I mean, she spiked the hell out of her. That was an awesome.
That was an awesome counter.
Yeah, that was an incredible reversal.
Really stiff.
I thought of you because in that, I actually thought, I'm like, I'm looking forward to talking to you today about it because you're, you know, that had like a Brett Owen-ish kind of look to it, you know, where you kind of sneak into a reversal and I'm like, he's going to like that move. Yeah, that wasn't a total shock, but
well, what
I was
about
a little surprised.
What about the Lumberjack match? Because everyone was shitting on that stipulation for the minute it was announced, and I thought these two guys made it work.
Yep,
I thought they did a good job.
No, I knew
they
were
really fun
work.
Brawl, and yeah. Keith, I think you put in your rant that they could have used maybe like even another 6 or 7 minutes. Like it felt like it was really gut cooking, and then it kind of ended. But I like the style of it, you know.
I think one that was good despite the stipulation, though, not because of the stipulation. Like one where they took it and made it work, but I mean, like really, there was much better ways that it could have been handled. I think.
Mm.
Well,
it was one that needed, like, you know, the Kevin's Hall, Chris Paul, to be thrown all around the bathroom, you know, anything like that. I think, like, it just felt like they were trying to work around something that needed to be there, basically, for me. But I mean, no, they made it work, though. It was tremendously entertaining, and I mean, either that or the Brock match can easily be considered a match of the night for me.
Yeah, and they are having a rematch on Raw tonight with another stipulation choice by the fans. I think it was like no holds barred. There was a couple false Kanye wearing something else, so see where they go with that.
Wow, street fight, no holds barred, or disqualification.
Or no holds barred street fight.
Yeah. Or dance competition. No.
Dance competition, yeah, you know that. You know Dean Ambrose could make that shit work, man. Oh,
I thought on the disappointing side of the coin was Chris Jericho. A guy I feel like with every return has really been more diminished than the next. And just, I mean, I don't know whose fault it is, him or Bray. Because Bray hasn't really had a great match since his Daniel Bryan match. And then the stuff with, you know, they did the Shield versus the Wyatts in February. And I thought Jericho would be a guy to kind of get him back on track. And it was okay, but nothing that stood out. So that kind of disappointed me. How about you, Keith?
Yeah, that was a huge disappointment. I mean, like, be honest, I haven't been following it for the last couple of months, really. So I had vaguely heard about Jericho's comeback and everything like that. But so I didn't, I wasn't 100% sure what to expect out of the match coming into it like that. But yeah, it was pretty dull stuff. And like, really, like, I don't know what more Chris Jericho has to add when he comes in and puts these people over. Like I said it before, like he's crossed the Mick Foley line now, where he's done it so many times now that he just doesn't, there's just no rub there to be had anymore from beating mm-hmm. him. Just like, you know, Rob Van Dam and
I agree.
And all the other guys, right? Like, you know, it's really nice of him, but I mean, I don't know. I think maybe you should just stay away now at this point.
I agree. I mean, I think that's why they had him win at Battleground, to at least make it seem like he could win a match, because all he does is come in and lose. But yeah, I agree. It's too bad because he was so great a few years ago in that great run he had. But since then, it's just been kind of disappointing with the disappointment whenever he comes back.
I think the other disappointment for me was that they couldn't fit the Usos on there for a tag title defense on what's supposed to be like the second biggest show of the year too. Like, I mean, they've been going out there and rocking it in every show that they've been on there, it seems like, and there's just the tag team ranks have just been decimated, and there's just nothing left for them, and you know, they couldn't. You think they could throw them on there against the Dust Brothers or something like that? But
right, exactly. Yeah. They could have found someone to, or even the, well, you don't want to do Harper Rowan again, I guess, but they're good every time. Reigns and Orton, I thought, had flashes of really good, but mostly disappointing. Orton got a lot of offense, but he also had the couple best moves of the match with that snap power slam and then the awesome floating RKO. And that was, I mean, I knew there was like a zero. Reigns was the one match, you know, I was really confident who was going to win, and I even bit on that RKO. I thought, oh my God, Orton's going to win this.
Yeah, I was actually kind of biting too on that one.
Yeah. I was very impressed. That was my match. I really wanted to be stellar, and it wasn't. And a lot of people were complaining about Reigns selling. Selling is not his problem. He takes a good beating. Reigns' problem right now is, I don't want to be too specific, but he has great like strike moves. He reminds me a lot of RVD. He's got a lot of strike moves, his Superman
odd
punch.
Comparison. Yeah.
Well, in this instance, not the actual way they work, but sometimes in the way they their matches are formulated.
Hey, bro, there's only one RVD.
Yeah. Yes, Reigns smokes something Samoan, but that's not it. He has you know, the Superman punch. He's got that awesome apron kick, and he's got he's got the spear. But getting to those things, he's a lot of punchy, kicky things. He needs to kind of establish that kind of stuff.
I think there's a lot of, you know, closeness with him and, like, Ultimate War. I keep saying it, like, in 1988 when, and I thought Miz could have been the perfect honky-tonk man for him. If you let Miz hold the title just a little bit longer and people start really getting annoyed with him, and you have Reigns squash him at, like, Survivor Series in, you know, 30 seconds and wins the IC title and holds it for a year, and then you really let him work the house shows. You put him in there with Ziggler, with Ambrose, with Rod, you know, anyone, just all these guys on the house, let him learn, give him a long run, turn Chris Jericho heel and have them feud on the house shows for a while, bring Finley out of fucking retirement on that, whatever, Regal, let him work these guys, let him really hone his craft in the ring, and then by next year at this time, he's almost ready to break out and be queued up for WrestleMania 32. Like, I think he's on this accelerated path that's just moving just a little bit too fast for what he's ready for. So that'd be my main concern there. I guess the one match left that we didn't really talk about, and that's Rusev and Jack Swagger, which I thought was really surprisingly good. And that whole feud's been good. I'll give Swagger credit. He really has worked hard and had a little bit of a renaissance at a time where he looked dead in the water. And I thought Rusev did a great job selling the ankle, and that was a much better match than it had any right to be. And Rusev has, I've really enjoyed him lately.
I would be thrilled if every show ended, we had at least one segment on every program on the network of him standing there and we hear the Russian national anthem. That might have been my favorite markout moment of the night. It's just tonight, I know Raw's what, barely an hour old. I don't know if it's going to happen. He needs to just destroy Sheamus, win the U.S. title, and just change it to the Russian heavyweight championship. Put a picture of Putin, I don't care, Nikita Koloff, I don't care, anybody. Just own that belt and just make it kind of like you're talking about with Reigns and the IC title in reverse.
Right.
And just own that thing. It's an easy, ready-made storyline. Easy. And they avoid it. I don't know why. But he should just destroy Sheamus, take the U.S. title, put the skull. I mean, even forget the current Russian flag. Hell, be Mavericks. Go back to the hammer and sickle and just be ridiculously evil and play that theme and, you know, channel your inner Nikolai or whatever. I think that'd be fantastic.
Speaking of Nikolai, right? It took me like about 45 seconds to realize when they're playing the national anthem last night after the match. I'm like, I know this song from somewhere. Oh, Nikolai used to sing it. That's right. They should have had him come out to sing. That would have been even better.
And then sing Karamia. So.
What do you think of that, Keith, as a potential move for Rusev to have him squash Sheamus and win the U.S. title?
I've been waiting for that for a long time, actually. I think that's been the obvious move for months now.
Yeah, I agree.
Rebounded the Russian title or something, you know, like
so easy,
so easy. And you know what? Rocky IV, second greatest movie of all time after Rocky III.
We can't have Rusev say "I must break you," though. We can't have that.
Well, he can kill Hulk Hogan.
Rusev kills Thunderlips.
All right. So, where do you think? So, let me ask you this then. Obviously, not as good as last year's SummerSlam, but last year's SummerSlam was like a top two all-time show. 2011 was a very good show. 10 was probably one of the worst. So where does this fall kind of in your overall SummerSlam rankings, Keith? Obviously, end up being one of the most memorable matches, I'm sure, of all time in SummerSlam history. You know, worth your $9.99 or $11.99, whatever you're paying, if anything.
$9.99.
Worth your $9.99. You know, what does it just rank historically for you?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, like, for me personally, I, you know, with a 6-month commitment and for only $9.99 a month, I already got my $60 worth out of the network, like, you know, 4 months ago, right? So this was basically a freebie. So I mean, you know, it's as far as that goes, I totally felt like I got my money's worth out of it for sure. It was definitely not as good as last year's show. Haven't really caught up in some of the other ones. Shockingly, I've not actually watched the CM Punk show yet, the 2011 one.
Yeah.
For instance, so I can't really rank that one, but I heard that one's really good.
That's a very good show.
I mean, it was for overall entertainment, it was really good, I thought. It doesn't match up to the top tier ones, I don't think. Like, we were watching 2002 on the network last week, for instance, and that is a hell of a show.
Yeah. So when we did our podcast, we ranked 02 and 13 were our top 1 and 2.
Yeah, so I mean, it doesn't rank up there, but I mean, it's certainly a solid middle of the road contender, I have to say.
Do you think Brock Lesnar becoming champion and right now Raw they're presenting him with the new belt, and it's pretty cool actually. Do you think this helps them with renewal subscriptions?
I don't know what's going to help them with renewals, to be honest. Like, because they lost so many people, it's like I don't know what people want out of the network. So be tricky. I mean, if they can come up with an awesome match for Night of Champions, I think that'll probably help them a lot. But I think really going forward, the single month $12.99 model is the one that they're really going to have to hammer on, because then they're right. Basically, you know, saying here, this, you know, we could put together a hot pay-per-view card maybe, and then we get people to sign up for the $12.99, and then, you know, maybe they'll forget to turn off auto renew or whatever, right? And there you go, and they'll stick around and like what they see.
Yep, I would agree. And it's funny because the 99 thing has been really a running joke, but I feel like it's starting to take hold. when people start chanting it, bringing signs, it's almost like, I don't know. I feel like they consulted with some outside marketing firm that told them to do this, because it seemed kind of against what they normally would have done to go this over the top and smarmy and embrace it. And I don't know. It seems to actually be working a little bit. Like, who doesn't know now that it's $9.99? I guess people may not have before.
Boy, there's going to be some backlash in Canada, though, if they ever tape TV up here again.
Yes. A lot of $11.99 chance.
$11.99. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So any final thoughts, Mr. Criscolo?
It was a fine show. There were some glitches. I think it was Mike's Apple TV, but whose house I was at watching it. But otherwise, I had no problems with any of it. I know I've been very critical of Brock, but I'm going to roll with it. I'm not going to be like these posers that go on Facebook who, you know, I didn't like this, I'm canceling, I'm never watching it. No, you're not never watching again, because you're on enough on Facebook to talk wrestling anyway. I never said I'm going to turn off the network because I didn't want Brock in this match. I'm going to roll with it. It was a smart choice. But the next 4 months are going to be key. The Rumble in Philly is huge. And if this Punk thing comes true, and hopefully JR, you and I will be in the building.
What better way for him to come back in Philly to win the
Rumble? Oh, my God. What a weekend that would be for Place to Be Nation to be in that building. But for now, it's fine. I like seeing the belts change. I'm not totally sold on the logo. I was expecting something a little more creative than just straightening the scratch. But
Well, and it's got the belt's got the side plates have the Brock's like little devil horn symbol over the hell that thing.
I heard they were going to take the side one of the two side plates are going to have the big gold belt front. They probably don't, do they? Like kind of mush them. Okay.
He's blocking out.
I think they should go with like the original network commercial design for the new logo, and then have like the side plates playing dubstep on MP3 players when you come down.
I think there should be two plates that say $9.99 on it. So.
Yeah,
that's true. Oh yeah.
In fact, I think every belt on the web on shop should be $9.99. No, I'm only kidding. No, it was a good show. I have no problem with it. Love Paige, love Dolph. Warming up to Brock, and I love Stephanie and her diesel outfit. It was incredible.
All right, so before we get to the mailbag, I'm going to open my own mailbag question for you, Keith. Has there ever been a better manager-wrestler pairing to hit all the boxes you need to check off to be awesome than Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman? I mean, Brock, the look, the swagger, the legitimacy, the in-ring ability. Heyman, the talking, the selling, knowing perfectly how to put a guy over, a top all-time promo guy. I mean, has there ever been a better pairing than these two?
Well, yeah, I think we discussed this one in the last mailbag one. And no, I think they are... they are one of the most fantastic pairings, especially of somebody who desperately needs somebody to talk for him, and right. Somebody who's the best talker in the business. So yeah, it's what better pairing could you have than these two?
I mean, it's just amazing. Like Brock,
I agree,
to be this big of a package and then not even have to worry about talking because he's got the best talker, arguably in wrestling history, doing all the work.
Oh, I know.
Could
you imagine if they had Brock out there trying to cut promos and stuff on top of this? Like, my God, it would just right. he would have been dead in the water after a month.
Right, would have killed him. And I mean, Heyman really has been the key to this. I mean, it's as much 50-50. And even right now, I don't have the volume up, but I'm captivated. Brock's just sitting on this little table, laughing with the title on his soul as Heyman's talking. So it's even just watching it without no volume is awesome. So, all right. So let's alternate like we have been doing the last couple times. We have some from the Nation here, and then Keith, you got your email bag opened up, and we'll go back and forth. So let's start with Michael McDonald of the Doobie Brothers here at Place to Be Nation. He wants to know, what were the plans for Mr. Perfect in late 93 if he did not leave the promotion before Survivor Series? Any insight on that one, Keith?
Late 93,
late 93, right? So he's supposed to be a Survivor Series, he walks, and Savage takes his place in that match, and then he ends up being out for about 2 years, I think, before he comes back to announce. So what was his back given out at that point? Was it the insurance thing?
Yeah, that was the insurance thing, yeah, where he was doing it, and then, yeah, I decided to collect the Lloyd's of London policy instead. I don't know if there was any specific plans for him, because I mean, like the Shawn Michaels match was kind of a flop at SummerSlam that year, and seemed like a big disappointment. And then he was back for refereeing at WrestleMania 10, but I never read about any specific plans after that. I think they just kind of they ran out of stuff for him at that point.
I mean, I'm guessing there would have been a heel turn to feud with Luger in there at some point. I mean, that seemed like where they were heading when he came back at 10 before he vanished again. So I would guess he would have hung around into early 94 and turned heel maybe at or around Mania. That would be my guess. All right, why don't we dive into the Smark mailbag?
Okay, well, I got a ton of people who emailed me after SummerSlam, of course, about Brock Lesnar and such. Let's see. Okay, here we go. Okay, I said in my SummerSlam rant that I wasn't overly impressed with Reigns' breakout moment beating Randy Orton. It also seems like Dean Ambrose is getting over more naturally with the loose cannon gimmick. If they went the 1997 Austin route and gave Ambrose whatever his finisher is to Triple H at an MSG house show and got arrested, went on to win the Rumble and beat Brock at WrestleMania, he could easily be the one. Well, yeah, shit, anybody could be the one if you're going to do that.
If you put him over like that.
Why don't we just say, yeah, if he pays the fans $100 each in the front row, too, that's what he's at it. Would I pivot to Ambrose, or would you at least let him, would you at least just get both over on top and let the fans decide? Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Dean Ambrose. I would have to say he is my favorite guy right now, overall. And I mean, like, yeah, I'm a little dismayed with all the jobs he's been doing, but he's doing a movie right now, so I guess you have to factor that in there.
And it's almost like Rollins needs to win more than him anyway. I mean, he doesn't really. I think he's already bulletproof, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think anybody buys Rollins as a top guy yet, especially when he has to beat Brock Lesnar to cash in the briefcase. So,
yes. And Ambrose, I mean, who would have thought? Because everyone pegged this guy to be the heel, right? Scott of the group. So it's pretty crazy that he ended up being the most effective face.
Yeah, it almost seems like Piper 89 to 92, like just totally flipped the switch, and the craziness works in your favor rather than agitate you. Should we switch off Reigns? No, I don't think either of them should be with Brock at WrestleMania 31. Right. I'm very steadfast that I think And I don't like Vince's idea of Rock either. I think one of the two guys is either Punk or Bryan. I know, and you said this, JR, but I think that makes the main event even more captivating, that here's this scrawny little pipsqueak who maybe got lucky last year in New Orleans, and now he's facing the guy that right now couldn't lose to anybody if you tried. And but Ambrose is definitely a guy that you should be paid attention to. And he right now doesn't need a belt. Already, here's a guy who doesn't need a title to elevate. He's already that good.
I think he's got like a little of that late 80s Piper mixed with the like 97 DDP. And not just because of the taped shoulder, but kind of like the loner coming out of nowhere, attacking guys, taking off, getting his shit kicked out of him by a bunch of guys, but doesn't care, just keeps fighting. Like, he has that kind of feel to him, you know? Man of the people, kind of.
Yeah.
And the DDP was ungodly over in 97.
I mean, really, if people have given up on The Rock after, you know, a year, like... Like, sounds like people want to do with Reigns, and I mean, you know, God knows where we'd be now, right? Like, I mean,
right?
Like, who knows? I mean, they at least, you know, I will say, it might not work out perfectly, and he might not be super over right now, but I mean, they're doing a good job with him, and they at least have to try. Like, they, you've gone this far with it, then you got to at least give it a shot. And if it fails, then it fails. But you know, if you go halfway with it, and then just, you know, just let it die, then that's even stupider, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're this desperate, this vacant at the top of the card. I mean, you can't just piss this guy away. He's got the potential there. He's maybe not ready yet, but it's in their best interest to make it work at some point. You can't just write him off and job him out. I mean, there's a couple guys on your blog, Scott, that were saying that. It's like, I mean, this is a promotion completely devoid of talent at the top level. So anyone who's got a chance, they need to explore fully. You know, whether that's Reigns, Ambrose, Ziggler, any of these guys. I mean, anyone that they think maybe could be the guy, they need to test. And that's why the booking of Cesaro is so bizarre to me. Because I think this is a guy that could be it. I think he could be their star. Maybe he's the one, not Ambrose. Maybe he's the one that should be swapped in. I think we're not counting him as a possible option if they could turn him around quick enough. If you don't have Punk or Bryan, I mean, what's wrong with him as a potential breakout superstar?
I'm still astonished what happened after WrestleMania. Like, he seemed absolutely on the verge of breaking through, and they just dropped him like a hot potato.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that could legit... I mean, we're talking about guys who look like they could legitimately beat Brock Lesnar. Cesaro's one of them. He's a strong bastard, and, you know, and he's a legit wrestler. So, I mean, that's a guy that could hang with him and look legitimate. It's like, I feel like they need to do a thing where Heyman starts using Cesaro to do the bidding of Lesnar while he's out, and then Cesaro finally snaps and just beats the shit out of Heyman and takes a run at Brock. I think the crowd would go nuts for him.
Yeah, or like Heyman using him to defend the titles while Brock's out.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, right? Where it'd be like, oh, well, you know, you don't deserve to have Brock here in this arena, so Cesaro will defend it instead, and Cesaro feels like, you know, he's being taken advantage of. And yeah, I think that would work as well.
And you know, I mean, Cesaro can talk, and he's already been doing a lot of the PR stuff, Scott, like they were saying in the reaction show last night. He's been doing a lot of the overseas PR stuff, kind of been the voice of the network in Europe, and there's a lot of potential with him. And he's got a really good look that they like, so we'll see. Hopefully they use more of him. All right, so let's go to Darren Richard Healy here. He's got a couple questions. So we're going back to 03 now. What's the story about why Mark Jindrak was swapped out for Dave Batista when Evolution was formed? And I don't remember Jindrak being swapped out for Batista. I remember Jindrak was rumored to be the fourth guy over the summer, right? And then they put him with Cade.
No, there were pictures of Triple H. Like, they were doing like those, not publicity shots, but like vignette shots. And it was Triple H, Flair, Orton, and Jindrak.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yep, he was in there for sure.
He was in there for sure. He just looked too... I don't know. He didn't have that grit. He didn't have that
roided up look.
Well, that
to be
too.
The muscle. I mean, that's.
But that plus. Well, Jindrak was pretty big, but he
wasn't
Batista
big.
Batista has that like earthly. You know, he was more tan. He looked older, so he had that kind of grizzled. Kind of like
not enough sex.
Yeah, no. He was too prissy. No. Dave just looked better in Evolution than Jindrak did.
And he,
it's like
and
Paul
he,
Roma and Luger and you know Luger never looked good in The Horseman.
Well,
so
what do you
come on? There's a terrible catalog picture of the four of them with their little sweatshirts on, and he's got this. Hey, I'm a horseman. It's like so stupid. Just never fit. But
any behind the scenes info on that one, Keith?
With Jindrak?
Yeah.
The weird one actually is that Seth Mates always said that. It was supposed to be, what's his name, Sick Boy. was the one who was actually supposed to be was Triple H's guy. And I guess he never even made it to any promotional things or like that. But I thought that would have been a really strange one to have as a member of Evolution, because that was supposed to be where the Katie Vick storyline was going.
Right.
Was like Scott Vick coming in as and doing that. I was like, oh, that one makes no sense to me either. But it's the Jindrak thing. I've only ever seen like the same thing, like the promotional photos of him and that kind of stuff. I never really heard of being like a serious thing going into it.
Well, I do remember there being rumors though at some point he was going to join before they put him with Cade. So was that 03, 04? Was someone going to get kicked out early? Was it? Oh, maybe it was 04. Maybe there were rumors that when Orton was going to get kicked out, they were going to replace him with Jindrak. And they just never did anything. I know there were rumors at some point when Orton was going to be booted in 04 that they were going to replace him with someone. And didn't.
Yeah,
so.
Obviously that never happened. But yeah, that does sound familiar too.
All right, so let's go to our Canadian sources of info first on this one. So he asks also, what's the truth behind Jack Tunney leaving in 1995 and his death with no staff going to his funeral and not announcing it on TV?
That is a good question. I don't know what happened with Jack Tunney to cause cause the huge falling out. I mean, because he had a cushy job for years and years with the promotion until he was replaced by Gorilla Monsoon, right, as the on-screen president.
Yeah, and I thought that was just because they wanted someone who could actually be on more, and they wanted a more active kind of figurehead on TV. So I didn't think there was ever any malice there, so I didn't realize that they didn't go to his funeral or whatever.
Keith, was his brother still running Toronto, that area? Gene, right?
Yeah, I mean, like as far as I know, like I said, I don't know of any major falling out with them. I mean, the Tunneys, yeah, they were running Toronto up until basically WWE took everything over for themselves as far as doing house shows.
Right.
So no, yeah. I don't know why it did, if he like did something behind the scenes. I mean, I've been reading through Observers around that same kind of time, and I never read anything either about any kind of major falling out between them. So
I think it all goes back to him not reinstating Savage at Survivor Series 91.
He forced the petition. He couldn't just do it.
All right, Keith, back to the mailbag.
All right, let's see. Well, out of all the SummerSlam ones, maybe we'll switch to the AWA for a minute here as a change of pace.
Oh, okay.
All right. Guy was watching the AWA documentary on the network. Talks about how Vern Gagne claims that he was the one who created the Hulkamania persona for Hulk Hogan. He was the one who taught him how to work and develop his character. Having seen Hogan on a near weekly basis from 79 to 81, he may have a point. All Vince did when Hogan returned was market a character that someone else created, which is really ironic considering Vince reinvented virtually everyone that came to work for him. How do I view this? Huh. I think there might be something to this. I mean, certainly the Hulk Hogan came in kind of whole cloth in 84 when he came in there based off that the character that was in Rocky. And, of course, see, there we go. Conversation steers back to Rocky 3 again. Yeah. It's synchronicity.
It always comes back to Rocky.
We cannot escape this movie today. But, I kind of agree with that. I don't know about Vern Gagne actually developing the Hulkamania character. Like, I think a lot of it was Hogan kind of developing it himself.
Yeah.
But, I mean, certainly, yeah, like, it wasn't like Vince McMahon thought up the character and developed it and brought it in and everything like that. Like, it was, he came in fully formed and just let him loose in the world as it was.
No, I agree 100%. I think it was a combo of Hogan and Vern and then just kind of the Vince touch at the end, just the super push behind it. But, I mean, if Vern goes to Hogan in that match of Bockwinkel and doesn't do the dusty finish, you wonder how different things could have been for AWA if Hogan sticks around, or do you think Vince would have came calling regardless?
Oh, I mean, Hogan wanted to own anyway. Like that, it wasn't something where, like the notion that you know Vern was offering him the title and or Vern didn't want to give him the title or you know anything like that. It was all that was very overblown. I mean, Hogan wanted out. Hogan didn't want to be the champion. So, I mean, it's not like Vern was going to give him the title and the AWA was going to take off from there. Like,
right.
Hogan clearly wanted to go to New York where the business was going to be, you know, going to be able to keep up with him. And, I mean, even if Hogan ended up being AWA world champion, AWA was not going to be able to follow along with him. I mean, they weren't able to expand nationally to keep up with him. And it was either way, Hogan was just going to be too big of a fish in the small pond.
And the other thing, you know, that's in that documentary is that, number one, the merchandising in the AWA was putrid in those days. I mean, there's that clip where the guys are walking through with their T-shirts and they look like some 11-year-old made it in, you know, art class or something. And then the other thing that, that's mentioned, that Hogan mentions, is that Vern wanted a piece of his Japan money. And that wasn't happening. Vern was just greedy. He was greedy and partially broke. So he was going to try and get grab as many slices of pie as he could before, you know, without going under. And Hogan's like, well, I'm not working for you when I go to Japan. It's not in my contract. I can leave and come back or whatever. So I think that was also part of it. But I think that Vern probably invented the word Hulkamania, but just didn't know what to do with it. Just didn't know what to do with it. It ultimately comes down to the fact that he didn't trust his brother, I believe, or his son. I think that's the ultimate ending of AWA, is that Greg should have had more booking ability, and I think he would have had a better vision. Now, would he still have competed with the WWF? I don't know. But I think they would have lasted a little bit longer if Vern had given Greg more authority.
More importantly,
Vern had a lot of things fall into his lap that he didn't know what to do with either.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, the Midnight Rockers is the classic example as well, mm-hmm. where you had these guys that were 10 years ahead of their time, and you know, the famous story about how they went to them and said they wanted to be the Rockers, and Vern was like, what was, you know, that they were talking about rocking chairs, you know, like, that kind of sums it all up. I mean, because he had a lot of state-of-the-art talent, and he just didn't know what to do with any of it.
Most importantly, would Greg have had Jim Brunzell working in the office with him?
The High Flyers, Inc.
Yes. All right, Jordan Duncan wants to know, Scott, do you get hyped or do you stay hyped?
Can we talk about Mojo Rawley for a second?
I got two words for Mojo Rawley. I got three words for Mojo Rawley. Kill, steam, kill. That's what I have for Mojo Rawley.
Mojo Rawley is such a weird one, because when he first came up, and there was like WWE was like so high on this guy. Like, that's all I heard was that oh, he's gonna get called up to the main roster after 2 or 3 weeks, and they're gonna push him like Goldberg and everything like that. And like, God, like, he's how do you flame out in developmental like that? That badly. I mean, like, you're He's literally wrestled the same match for about 4 months straight now,
mm-hmm.
and kind of night after night. He hasn't learned anything, and it's just what a spectacular waste. I have to say that whole thing has turned out to be.
So back to Michael McDonald here for another good one. So Keith, if you could build your own supercard with 4 main events, 2 pre-98 and 2 post, it could be any kind of match, tag, singles. You can only use each guy once. What are your 4 top matches on the supercard?
Well, I always feel like we were robbed of a stadium show featuring the Mega Powers against Sting and Lex Luger.
Ooh, that's a good one.
So I feel like that one should be on there somewhere. Pre-98 and post-98, I'm trying to think of the thing is too, I think we also were robbed of a giant stadium show with Hogan against Savage in a meaningful role. Like, WrestleMania 5 was an awesome showdown between them, but I mean, it was in, you know, Trump Plaza, Trump Casino, and mm-hmm. it was basically a paid show in front of a bunch of bored gamblers. That one I also feel like is something where it should have been like a giant 70,000 seat stadium to blow that one off, because it just felt like that was the kind of match that really needed that huge atmosphere.
And another one we never got was Hogan Austin. I mean, I guess it all goes back to Hogan.
Yeah, there we go. Well, there's a good one for post 98. Absolutely. But I guess Austin Goldberg would be another one they could throw on there as well as the dream match that could have happened but never did. So yeah, I guess any of those 4 matches I'd say would be some of my choices.
How about you, Scott? Anything stick out?
Taker Sting, I think, would be a great main event.
Like, what do you think? Like 90? That's a good. Let's talk about that. So both of you, what would be the best year to have had that match? Because I feel like when one was at his peak, the other one wasn't, and they only crossed paths in 1 year, and to me that's 96. Like, I feel like 96 is probably where they were both at their best, that they could have had a really good match.
I mean,
Sting was ahead of Taker at that point.
If we're in a dream world where they're both able to compete in the same promotion, you mean?
Yeah, so let's say they're in the same promotion any year, but they were at as good as they were at that time, right? Now, so like, if we're talking 1991, you're going to get 91 Undertaker versus 91 Sting. So to me, 96 was kind of where they cross, as Sting was coming downhill and Taker was going up.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously for most of 96, Sting wasn't even working. But yeah, probably, maybe I'd say early 98 even, when Sting was coming off the Hogan feud and he was still really hot.
Yeah.
As world champion, and Undertaker was still pretty decent after working with Brett for a while. So I think 98 would be a good time to match them up like that.
Yeah, Taker was hot too, coming off the Shawn series and heading into the Kane thing. So that's probably the time to go with right there.
Mm. Let's see. I feel we need Brett in something. Brett or Shawn in something, not together. Be a good guy to have with Brett. Brett Kurt would be a great match. Sean Punk.
Yeah, Sean Punk or Sean Daniel Bryan.
Or Sean Daniel Bryan.
I like Sean against either of them. Brett Kurt would be fun.
I think for pre-98 too, you have to throw on Road Warriors versus Demolition on there too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cliche, but hey, you know.
And not like 91 versus 91. Like,
yeah, exactly. 80, yeah.
Like 84 versus 89.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, all right, back to the mailbag.
My mailbag?
Your mailbag, sir.
Your mailbag.
Okay.
Still a couple more, and we'll take a break.
Sure. I got some random question ones here. Would I consider Batista's 2014 run a failure? This person personally wouldn't. He tapped out to Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, put the Shield over clean as a sheet, and that's good enough for him. I think, yes, it's a failure because they paid him a shitload of money for a specific purpose, and that purpose did not happen the way that they wanted to. So from a business standpoint, yes, I think it absolutely was a failure.
And I firmly believe if Batista had come in a year earlier or a year later, he would have been okay. He just came in at the worst possible shitstorm of a time to walk into and win the Rumble. Like, I feel like if he won the 2013 Rumble, who was that, Cena? Like, if he wins that one, I don't think anyone cares. If he comes in maybe this year, maybe people are excited. If he comes in the summer or last year, like, it was just the worst possible time to come in during the Daniel Bryan madness. So, I mean, that just put him behind the eight ball completely.
He should have won the 40-man Alberto Del Rio Battle Royal, actually. The Rumble that year, I think. That would have been... Obviously, he wasn't around at that point, but I mean, yeah, like that would have been a good one for him to win, too.
Mm.
Exactly. This was just really bad timing for him. So, I mean, I guess looking at it your way, Keith, I said it's a failure. I'd say I think it was a failure that they salvaged by having him put Bryan over and turn heel and start doing the Blutista and then the back to the cocky Batista look. And I thought they turned it around quickly and did well. I'd say... The absolute nadir of that run was the nadir. What was the word? How do you say that?
Nadir.
Ralph Nadir. I would say his match with the Del Rio at Elimination Chamber was like just the bottoming out of Batista, and then that's after that is when they started to turn it around.
Yeah, I think this person that mailed you, Keith, says it was a success. Yeah, if it's a success if he got paid a quarter of what he did. Here's all this money. Now job out to the Shield. No, that's the way. I don't think that was the plan.
Well, the Shield, the Shield of future stars. That's not an awful role for him to be in.
No, it's not the role, but you don't pay a guy that much money to come in and job out to people. I mean, he should have.
Yeah, and I think Batista felt the same way too. I think there was some bitterness in his part involved with that too, because they were paying him all that money and then basically asking him to do that too. I think there was talk of that as well.
I'd say the bigger miss is that he ended up being, one of the biggest stars of the biggest movie of the year, and they're not attached to it. Like, to me, that's the biggest miss of it all. Like, that he's not going around as WWE star Batista or carrying the belts or appearing on TV with, that's what they missed out on more than anything, even than him having any kind of meaningful feud. I think that press is what they missed out on.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Just their luck. Yep. They stand behind these guys and make all these movies, and then this guy backs his way into this mega movie, and they're not associated with him, even though all he's ever been known for is wrestling. But somehow it's he's not associated with them at this one point in time. So, all right, let's do another one from the mailbag, Keith.
Okay, here's an interesting one. With the recent Biogenesis arrests, any chance that WWE stars get linked? The guy was based in Miami, which is the home of certain well-known former actor/former wrestler. Considering the baseball players linked to him didn't fail drug tests, I'm wondering if WWE's testing would catch it. WWE's testing, that's funny. If some WWE talent does happen to get implicated, how big of a deal is it? Does it get overlooked in the mainstream media, or does it become a big deal since WWE is publicly traded? Yeah, here's the thing. There hasn't been a drug failure in WWE since, like, what?
2000? Mysterio? Is that the last one?
Like, Rey Mysterio? Yeah, like, either the drug testing is an incredibly effective deterrent, or else there's something really fishy going on for the past few years, I have to say.
Right, well, I don't think they're testing HGH, so that's probably part of it. I don't know, because it's not like a competition, right? So... nothing's tainted or anything like that. I mean, I know it's not legal, but if you had the prescription, I don't know. It's a weird gray, hazy area. I mean, in baseball, it's a big deal because, you know, there's a lot of money involved at the top, and wrestling it's all completely. This is where I think they lean on the fact that it's scripted and predetermined. It's so different than, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger roiding up for the Expendables. You know, it's more like that than like baseball.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I wouldn't want to cast any aspersions on the legitimacy of professional wrestling as a sport or anything like that. But yeah, I don't. I think if guys get caught, it would pretty much get swept under the rug. It seems like they're only doing drug test failures for their own purposes, like to get rid of Ricardo Rodriguez or, you know, things along that kind of line, or, you know, because they don't want to pay Evan Bourne anymore, and so they'll magically catch him doing pot, or, you know, those kind of things like that. I think if they were still doing serious drug testing, then yeah, it would be, might be a bigger deal, but no, at this point, these guys know how to beat the system.
Yeah. And I think it would only be a big deal or scandals if something like a Benoit level situation occurred, you know, where there was some guy dies or has a heart attack, something crazy like that is linked to it more than just, you know, if Dolph Ziggler shows up on the biogenesis list, I don't think the media is really going to give a shit. So, all right, let's go back to the Facebook page here, and then we'll take a break. We'll do one more. We have... let's see. All right, Matt Souza. If you had to pick one wrestling feud from any promotion to watch start to finish, what would it be?
Either like way. On a DVD set?
Yeah, so you get a full DVD set of an entire feud from any promotion in history that you could watch.
For me personally, well, I mean, Austin McMahon was on, or they already did that, and that was pretty great. Magnum Tully had a pretty great storyline attached to it as well.
Rusev Swagger,
there you go. Yeah, that was exactly another epic there. Hogan Savage... Obviously, the Mega Powers one, the brilliant year-long storyline ran through there. I mean, I don't know. There's quite a lot of them. I don't know if I could pick one necessarily, but...
What about Raven and Dreamer in ECW?
That's a lot of matches.
Yeah, it's a lot of matches and a lot of angle.
A lot of Tommy Dreamer doing the job, but...
What do you think, Scott? Anything stand out to you?
Flair Dusty. 85 to, you know, 86, 87. Anything in Mid-Atlantic. I like obviously Magnum Tully. It's a good one, Keith. Road Warriors. Anybody? No.
I would take like the entire Savage Liz like legacy, like everything. So starting with where they come in and Savage is abusive, go through all of Savage's emotional storylines and mega. You get all the Mega Power stuff with Liz. Go into the Jake, some of the Dusty stuff, Flair. Like, there's so much there up until 7 into 8. So I'm talking, like, WrestleMania 2 to 8 is really the whole Savage Liz story. So how's that for an outside-the-box one?
Well, I mean, really, the Randy Savage story is one of the few fully formed storylines in wrestling with a beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
Because they always talk about, you know, oh, we're telling stories. But this was one of the ones where they were actually, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but, I mean, it was a fully formed character arc. Yeah, exactly. You had Savage. He was, you know, he was the crazed psychopath who bullied his woman, and he lost everything, and then, you know, realized that he needed her back, and then married her and rode off into the sunset, basically. And
well, then it even extends. He get married, and then all of a sudden, these predators start coming after, and now he's defending her.
Yeah, and then he wins the world title. And he gets back everything that he lost in the first place.
Yeah.
No, it was an awesome. It was a truly wonderful storyline, and that was one of the few where they actually fluked into, you know, doing something like that, where it's something where they found something that actually could have an endpoint, because it was they wanted to take Savage out of active competition.
Yeah, no one's, to me, had more emotional angles or storylines in history than Randy Savage. To me, that's why, you know, our buddy Parv was asking, he did that quiz the other day, and one of his questions was, who's the greatest of all time? And my choice was Savage, because I feel like he had the perfect mix of arguably being one of the best wrestlers in ring wrestlers in wrestling history, and I feel like no one had more emotional stories that drew you in like Randy Savage did. And I think we just named some. You got Steamboat, you got Warrior, you got Hogan, you got Jake, you got Flair, right into the NWO, the stuff with Paige and Kimberly. I mean, just nonstop, like, emotional fuse that really you got involved in. And he was such a, just brought you right into everything he was doing. And to me, no one had more of those than him. And that's the whole point, right?
Well, he was one of the greatest. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
All right, Scott, this one's for you, and then we're going to take a break. Justin Pratt wants to know, what other matches do you think are lacking in the sex department?
AJ and Paige didn't even nearly hit that moment.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. We'll dive right back into the mailbag, and we'll keep this party rolling.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant.
Sorry.
The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Parv. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit.
Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Return the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net. So they should have had a street fight. No, you know, last man standing. I said this match is not sexy enough, and instead I said this match is not has not enough sex in it. and people have rolled with that. So, of course, it had to be a Triple H match. I say that too, which is even funnier.
Oh well, yeah.
and I'd argue there was a lot of sex in that feud.
Well, remember not, the not pose down,
was, the pose down, and everything else. I mean, that was about as sexy as it gets with those guys. All right, Nation, we're back, diving into the mail here with Scott's, Keith, and Criscolo. We're going to go about another 20 minutes or so here, so we'll go into some more questions. Keith, why don't we go back to the mailbag for the next one?
Okay, since they only will probably have Lesnar for limited dates year after year, what do you think of giving him the new streak gimmick at WrestleMania? He can jump off the fact that he beat The Undertaker and he's now 1-0. Okay, well, first of all, I have an immediate problem with the math there on that one, because he's not 1-0.
Right.
He's like, what, like... 2-1, I think.
Yeah, he won at 19, lost at 20, and then won this past one.
Yeah, and so. Lost at 29.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So. Oh, yeah, that's right. Lost to Triple H too. Yeah, no, man, math is not your friend here, dude. This random writer here.
I do think they should do another street gimmick with someone, though.
Yeah, no, I think it's a cool idea, and if they hadn't already dropped him out to like Goldberg. Then yeah, no, it would have been a fine idea to turn Brock into like the yearly WrestleMania traditional draw or something like that. But right. But no, unfortunately that train has sailed. But yeah, I mean you could still do it. I mean like you can certainly still make Brock into like the traditional WrestleMania guy for sure. Like that is absolutely an option. I thought maybe they might have done something similar with a Batista or a Rock as well. But yeah, it's. Unfortunately, yeah, we can't do it with Batista unless they lie. And God knows, I would not want to live in a world where a wrestling promoter would ever be accused of lying.
Right? We cannot have that. But no,
can't have that. Some things are sacred.
I do think it's a good gimmick for a young guy coming up, saying I'm going to do what The Undertaker did, and I'm going to beat 21-0, whatever it was, 21-1, and maybe run with it for a few years if they could do it. You know, they almost had it with Edge, and they had him lose that stupid Money in the Bank match. But
oh, I know. Yeah, that's crazy. Like, how do they? Like, why would they just throw that one away like that?
Especially when they had him facing Tigger a year later. It would have been perfect. The good news is here, Cesaro defeated Jack Swagger tonight, so hopefully he's back on the winning train. So,
oh, good.
We'll see. Maybe he can be the guy that goes undefeated at Mania.
Now, am I a bad person because I feel bad that Jack Swagger then is doing jobs all of a sudden? Because it's like... Because now they've backed into getting this guy over.
Right.
Basically. And you know, now already they're gonna waste it, right?
Maybe. Well, we'll see. I mean, he had to lose to Rusev. I don't think losing to Cesaro is anything bad. I mean, if he came out and lost to Heath Slater tonight, I'd be questioning it. But I think they can keep him going. Actually, it looks like he's got maybe a feud starting with Bo Dallas or something here. Bo's coming out and talk to him. So maybe he can fight with him for a bit. Let's go to Jay Hinchy. Do you guys think Rey Mysterio is officially done with WWE? I think that's a pretty easy yes, right?
Yeah, he was.
I hope so.
He showed up at Triple Mania last night, right? Even though he's still on a contract.
On video, yeah.
Oh, okay, it was on video.
It was a video.
I think there's too much bad blood there for the in the immediate. Could he be back someday? I'm sure he'll be a Hall of Fame guy at some point or whatever, but I think for the near term, I think he's done.
Yeah, I think he kind of burned some bridges there, too, on the way out. But although apparently I heard he was not cashing his checks. Like
right.
They were sending checks and they weren't cashing them. And that's exactly what they need right now, actually.
I know, right?
So that, yeah. That might help them. I don't know.
That's probably the best thing they could hope for. It's probably save someone's job.
On the on Ray for a minute, last night on the recap show, I don't know if it was Dylan or Zellner, one of them said that apparently they told Ray, while you're under contract, you get hurt again, we're not paying for your surgeries. I guess they're tired of him, you know, trying to do things outside the norm, and he keeps getting hurt, and they've got Ray like over a barrel apparently. So
oh yeah, but I mean like you know Ray's got a lot of money, so it's not like it's
right.
Not like he's you know hurting for cash or anything like that. Obviously,
yeah.
No, I think he just wants to get back in the ring at some point.
Yeah, I don't think he should though. Like,
I don't either.
I mean, I don't know. I watching him his past six or seven comeback attempts is just it's just so sad. You know, like. Like the guy's got money hand over fist from the masks and you know merchandising and DVDs and
well even
know.
If he wants to do like a Legends thing though in Mexico you know maybe wrestle once or twice a year I mean he can't even do that right now he's so tied down
yeah exactly.
Hinchy also asks, will Jeff Jarrett's GFW ever get off the ground? Is it meant to get off the ground? At this point, I think it's just a scam. I think, yeah, we're searching the globe for talent, and we'll fight it someday, and it's going to be a lot of training camps, and okay, see you later. That's what it feels like to me. It doesn't feel like it's actually legitimate.
Yeah, I don't even know what his deal is anymore. Like, wasn't there supposed to be a reality show that he's doing based around it or something like that, or... Or is that? Or am I confusing that with the Billy Corgan thing? Or are they like?
Yeah, I don't know. I just it's too complicated. He's always pulling. He should just be with Russo and let them run some swervy fake promotion. they can beg for money on Twitter and sell VIP memberships and everything else. Two jackasses.
Wrestling without a ring.
I'm just glad he's been quiet the last. Couple weeks finally because there was like a 2-week stretch there where Russo was just out of control on Twitter and news everywhere. He would not shut up about anything, but he seems like he's quieted down a bit. All right, Keith, what do you got?
More Daniel Bryan. Okay, so with Angle out as an option and Reigns seemingly pigeonholed as Rumble winning WrestleMania main eventer, let's say Daniel Bryan is ready to return around the Rumble. How would you book him to WrestleMania and where do you think he fits in on the card? God, I just don't know if he should even come back. Like, apparently he's still having numbness in his hand, and like anybody who's seen Paul Orndorff from around 1995 with his one big arm and one little arm knows that that's just like
right.
That's scary stuff. Like, is it really worth it? Like to
well, do I, that? Yeah, and I guess it depends where the injury is. I mean, if it's still his neck bugging him, then I'd really consider not coming back if I were him. It sounds like it's his elbow now, which is fixable, and he's probably not as much risk. So let's say that in a perfect world, he's completely healthy. He gets a clean bill of health for the Rumble. Yeah. You know, you could have him win it all and then go to Mania and face Brock. I think that's probably what most people prefer to see. There's still just that little part of me lingering that feels like he's not – it just wouldn't look legitimate enough. But, I mean, I guess he's so established as a wrestler, it could be okay.
Here's the thing, though. It's like – I don't want them to Batista Roman Reigns like with this. Because if Daniel Bryan comes back at the Rumble, it's just going to – people are just going to want to see that again. And not – which is not to say they're wrong to want to see it, but it's just such a terrible time to like bring him in because people are going to naturally have expectations. And if WWE doesn't want to deliver on those expectations, then fine. But don't bring him back at that point.
Right, hold him off.
After WrestleMania, right, until everything's been established again. I don't know. I just think that would be really bad timing to. It'd be great, you know, bring it back as a surprise, whatever, fine. But like, I think that would be building up a lot of expectations in people's mind that they're not willing to fulfill. And I think it would just be asking for trouble on all accounts to do it. To be honest, but I mean, if you were, then certainly the David and Goliath thing with Brock Lesnar would not be the worst idea. But yeah, I agree. There's a lot of problems with legitimacy there, as far as just because Brock is such a big guy and Daniel Bryan's such a little guy, and it's not like he was booked to be extremely dominant the past year, even as champion, is the thing.
I think too, they have to remember, you know, not every year has to be the main event of Mania. Is the title change is a rising or, you know, a breakthrough moment for someone. Like, there were so many Manias before where Hogan has defended his title, and not every year has to be this monumental shift or big change. I mean, is the worst thing in the world if Brock Lesnar defeats someone? Say he fights The Rock. Does Rock have to win? Why can't Brock just leave Mania as champion still? Defeat Rock in a great main event and still become... Like, why do we have to have a... Why does Mania have to be the big shift of champion? It doesn't have to be. As long as the story's good and the match is great, like, who cares?
That never always was. I mean, Punk 2 years ago.
I'm talking the main event. Like, world... Like,
oh, you mean the match ends with... Well, Cena did it, what, 3 years in a row or whatever, almost.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, they have to remember that. You don't need this big seismic shift where the next generation starts at the end of Mania. Like, it doesn't always have to be that, you know?
Right.
Do you agree with that, Keith?
Yeah, I mean, and, like, the best laid plans go awry. Like, because, like, for instance, last year, the whole thing was supposed to be building up to, you know, the Vince McMahon Triple H showdown, which just never happened because things went crazy and everything changed, and there is a certain danger at this point to trying to build things up too far in advance. Like, it's nice to have a long-term storyline, but if you put all the eggs in that one basket and then and something ridiculously weird happens to change it, then you're going to be boned. So yeah, I think it is more important just to maybe even just a couple of months out to have a solid idea where you're going. But yeah, they really don't need to have a company changing moment every year like it seems they want to.
Right. All right, so Eric Gill's asked a few. We'll ask just one of them here. Before the recent hijacking this year of live crowds to help Daniel Bryan's push, can you recall another time that fans live or at home had true sway over the booking? So I like this is a good question. So I guess indirectly in a negative way, The Rock, right? That was everyone booed the shit out of him and hated on him and ended up saving turning around his career. Can you guys think of another one that was big enough that they were, I guess Batista in 05 is another one too, where the crowds were just choosing him over Orton and they were forced
Austin.
To go with him.
Austin
96.
Yep.
I'd also say the Hart Foundation in 97 as well, where Canadian, where the Canadian public turned it into such a big story that they created a heel babyface dynamic that had never even been seen before in the business, like the home country kind of deal, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, absolutely. Austin obviously is the biggest example of an organic push where the crowd basically forced somebody through when there was clearly no plans for them to become that big of a star.
How about Sting in like 88, 89?
No, they wanted him to be a big star.
Okay. Yeah.
Like that was Ric Flair went out there and deliberately tried to make him like that.
Yeah, that's true.
I think though, to a certain degree, Sting in the Rafters might be a case though, where like where fans kind of where he just sat up there and fans just kept rallying bigger and bigger behind him and they kept putting it off longer and longer to increase the reaction. Oh, actually, you know another one too. Ric Flair in '98.
Yeah,
when he got fired and fans basically hijacked the show week after week until they were forced to bring him back.
Right, yeah, that's a good one.
Eric Bischoff had no plans to have him come back again. In fact, Meltzer was saying that Flair was in serious discussions about jumping to WWF at that point, just to get away with it, because he felt like there was no chance of coming back.
Man, he should have just done it. What a miss.
I agree.
In retrospect, yes, I think so.
So
also, in retrospect, Owen Hart should have went to WCW.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously. So here's a good one that came out of our little chat room here at Scott from Andrew Reich saying how...
Yes.
It would be cool if they, you know, with the big gold, if Brock leaves and maintains his championship through Night of Champions and isn't on all the time, it's too bad, or wouldn't it be awesome if the tag titles became the top prize? And I know they wouldn't do it because, you know, we mentioned earlier, what if the IC belt was elevated enough to be the draw? And just start putting, like, super tag teams together and make the tag titles really the pinnacle. So maybe... You know, Sheamus and Roman Reigns win the tag titles all of a sudden, and they elevate it up, and then you get Orton teaming up with Batista comes back, and they go after the tag titles, and then Bray Wyatt all of a sudden wants to get him, so he picks one of the Wyatt. You know, all of a sudden, the tag titles become the top prize through when you are ready to have the world title come back. I mean, it's probably way too far down the road, but that would have been something they could have done if they had been planning a little bit ahead.
Yeah, if they'd been planning a little bit ahead, they wouldn't have merged the damn titles in the first place in December. Because this would have been a good time to have two world titles.
I think. Yeah, that's true, too. Although, would it have diminished Brock being just destroying Cena or being the man?
If no, there because was another John world Cena, title
bumping around.
John Cena is a world title unto himself.
Yeah, that's true.
You have the world. You have the WWE world title, the world heavyweight title, and the Bean John Cena title. And that's the John Cena title is the one that carries the weight.
That's true. That's a good point. What do you think, Scott?
Tag straps leading shows. I mean, we've talked about it before. I mean, that was the original plan in 2002 was for the IC belt to be the focus of Raw when Brock went to SmackDown. I just don't think they want to try hard enough, you know, to really do it. But it could help elevate a lot of guys at the same time and maybe wake up the mid-card a little bit. It'd be inventive. Maybe that's what... they have five shows and they have the network. I mean, they're limitless right now and they just stay in this box that they don't want to think outside of.
One of the ideas I love the best on... And I need to plug this on here. If anyone out there new to hearing the show hasn't listened to our... A three-part series of Goodwill Wrestling on PlaySimulation.com, where Will and his buddies just did a phenomenal job talking about how to fix WWE, how to fix the network. Just like all basic, really smart stuff that they could easily do and really fast, intelligent listen. So if you're going to listen to anything on here coming out of this show, I'd recommend those for you, Goodwill Wrestling on the site. But one of the ideas I really liked on those was the idea to have a network title. So, you know, kind of like the old TV title, it's only defending on the network shows. And you have somewhat of a decent pedigree win it. You know, you're not going to make it like a real low-level belt. But I keep coming back to this guy because I think he's a good crossover mix between the upper card and the world. Maybe a Sheamus or something like that is your network champion. So you can catch him every week on Main Event. He every network show, he's defending the title. Keith, what do you think of something like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, Main Event is such a colossal waste right now on the network as it is. Like, there's something where you have the show that's exclusive to the network, and what are they doing with it? Like, you know, Raw recaps and D-level matches all the time, right? Like, you know, you could do whatever you want with it, and they do nothing with it. That's the kind of thing that really frustrates me about the network, because that's the kind of thing that everybody thought they were going to get, right? Like,
it can't miss.
Yeah, exactly. Like, make me want to watch it, like, as... You know, there's make me want to make it a reason to pay $9.99 a month instead of just this show that Ion Network didn't want. So we're going to throw it on here and, you know, have Damian Sandow getting squashed by Sheamus to be the main event week after.
And they're doing it live, too. I mean, they could do a semi-live, whatever, even if it's like a 20 minutes behind, whatever it is.
Yeah, have the Usos come out and defend the tag titles every week or something.
And they tried to do that last week, right? They did that open challenge or whatever. Yeah. So,
The mystery team of Ryback-Axel and... And what was the other one? Rob Van Dam and Sheamus or something like that?
I think so, yeah. So, yeah. You know, they do something like that. Have some kind of, even if they do like a championship series, not even just a tournament, like a series, like a round robin World Cup kind of thing, where it carries over week to week. You get, almost like the Bound for Glory series, where it's the main event championship series. So you got to track the points week to week. And it gives you a reason to watch the show, you know?
Well, you do the G1, right?
Right, exactly. Something like that, where it's week to week. Every episode of main event, guys are fighting and getting points. And it builds to a title shot at one of these other pay-per-views. Winner gets an IC title match at Hell in a Cell, whatever. Whatever you want to do.
Exactly. Tournaments are awesome.
Well, you're not going to get an argument from us on that. That's for sure.
They are. You need something. If you have something to build to, it's really great. So, all right, Keith, let's go a couple more in your mailbag here.
Okay. Something came up in the Diesel Brett Backlund 94 thread yesterday. What was going on with Roddy Piper from losing to Bret Hart at Mania through his WCW debut in October 96? I know he did the odd match, King of the Ring, Gold Dust thing, blah, 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 and the odd special appearance, like reffing matches at WrestleMania, but why wasn't he wrestling more regularly? Was Vince not interested in having him as a main player? Especially because Vince was pretty desperate for a star in the early 90s, yeah, to say the least. And Piper's one of the top 10 biggest names in history. He could have done good business. I know he was doing movies, but they were few and far between, and he could have easily done his WCW schedule in WWF. So what was going on? That is a darn good question, because he will turn up on Raw, coming up actually, yeah, like WrestleMania 11 on the shows I'm watching on the network right now.
Right.
Or 95 doing a refereeing gig. And clearly still a bigger star. but I'm thinking,
was he banged up?
Timeline's a little whack. Wasn't did he have a hip replacement around that time? Was that not what it is? Or
I think so, because I mean that match can remember.
Well, that was in 91, because that's the whole thing with the crutches. But right, did that stretch all the way
yeah.
through.
Yeah,
the
I think mid-90s? He has another one. I thought he had another. Yeah. I think he had
another one, because he was, because the difference between Piper from even 92 to when he showed up in WCW as a decrepit old man is pretty dramatic. So this, obviously, if something physical was going on there in those 4 years.
Yeah, because that match at King of the Ring 94 is just abysmal. He can barely move. And then even the street fight with Goldust, he's kind of hobbling around. He's not really moving great in that match either. So I feel like there was some kind of surgery and rehab in the mix there that had him out of the ring and not.
Yeah.
Plus, don't forget, they're doing the new – I know, contradictory, right? Because, you know, the biggest guy was like Bob Backlund at the time. But the new generation push was on. So I think they were trying to avoid having guys like that be their main players. I know the funny joke is the – biggest new generation push pay-per-views King of the Ring 94, and it's headlined by Lawler and Piper, but the majority of the show had young guys, so that might have been part of it too.
I concur.
Yep.
All right, next one.
Okay, let's see, last one I got here. Read in most recent Saturday Night's Main Event rant, and a random question popped into my head. Why didn't Legion of Doom and Demolition fight over the tag titles? Yeah, good question. I love the Hearts as much as anyone, but they could have easily been screwed over at SummerSlam. The Demos could have kept the belts until a future episode where LOD goes over. Perhaps Hawk and Animal could have acted in Axe's career with a Doomsday device, leading to a blow-off against Smash and Crush. Okay. Hindsight is 20/20, but why didn't they feud for the belts? I think, I don't know, I just think that Vince had just cooled so much on Demolition by the point that LOD came in that he just had no interest in doing the match anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is weird, because it was still a dream match for everybody, but yeah, just Vince just did not see it as.
Do you think deep down too, he didn't want to bury his creation, so he just kind of let them fade? Like, if LOD came in and destroyed Demolition, doesn't that kind of admit that NWA had the better guys? Like, isn't that Vince's profile to do something like that?
Yeah, kind of. I think so.
Mm.
Yeah, it was always a weird one, but yeah, no, I mean, I just think even as watching as a fan, it was obvious that he was, but I mean, you know, Demolition kind of. By mid 1990, they were done.
Has any great team or guy? I mean, just talk about a drop off a cliff after. I mean, WrestleMania 6, you're on the top of the world, and then 2 weeks later, they're nothing. It's like they're nothing. It's amazing how quick they fell off.
Yeah, I know. I mean, even not knowing anything of the business at the time, when I was watching, even I was the biggest Demolition fan in the world, and yeah, it was just like, well, time to move on to something else now. I think, and it's just, you know, the Bart Simpson thing, right? You know, and. With Krusty the Clown, where he tells him, you know, well, you're done, and that's what happens. Sometimes you know, sometimes you're just done, and that's what it was, I think.
Yeah, and it sucks. Well, they had a little bit of a bounce where they had the match with like the Rockers on Science Main Event or whatever, and I think they held strong up until about summer. So once Crush started coming in, they kind of organically turned heels when it just got kind of weird, and it was sad because as a big Demolition fan, it's like they just had their career defining moment to see them just fall off the cliff and be healed just weeks later after that awesome pop and moment was just.
Yeah, I think too was because they got destroyed by the Colossal Connection to lose the titles in the first place, right. I think that was really the falling off point for them, where, you know, just went in there and Axe just got totally demolished and just killed their aura. I think like the winning the titles back at WrestleMania was a nice thing, but that was more about Andre. It wasn't really about Demolition. They were pretty much the shell of themselves by that point, I think.
Do you think they would have been, I mean, I hate to ever question anything that gave us that moment and that pop, but do you think they would have been better off not even have Demolition in that match if they would have had like the Hearts win the titles there instead?
Well, it was supposed to be the Hearts winning the titles there. They changed it up to Demolition kind of almost last minute.
That's right, yeah.
So yeah, like that's what the direction originally was.
Well, unless you believe the original Herb Coons. Didn't he have the Bushwhackers in that match, like the early fuzzy reports, if you go back and read some of that stuff?
Yes, he did. Those are some of those early tidbit ones are very entertaining to read through.
But, oh yeah, those 1990-91 stuff are good. I mean, yeah. And he's like fearful of it. He's like, keep hearing rumors, Bushwhackers versus the Colossal Collection. I mean, and he had it for a while, like in his little WrestleMania preview. Oh, that would have been brutal.
Ugh.
You want to do one more?
I got to wrap it up here, guys. So.
Okay. All right. We'll go ahead and close out. Mr. Keith, thank you as always for joining us. It was a great time. Mm-hmm. We'll put another one of these on the books in a couple weeks here, or a couple months rather. Scott, we're off the rest of the week. We got Kevin Kelly show and Main Event on Wednesday. We're going to have a couple guests, I believe, on Kevin Kelly. Still trying to work out Rob Conway. Also going to have Ray Rowe on. Was just in a car accident, I believe, recently. So he's out of action a little bit. So he's going to talk about that and what he's going through in his rehab and recovery as part of one of Ring of Honor's Rising Stars. Who do you got on main event?
We're going to have three of the core four. Andrew Reese, Jordan Duncan, and Steve Willey will be there. Ben Morse is off, and we have a special surprise that we will unveil replacing Mr. Morse on Wednesday.
All right, looking forward to that. Keith, anything you want to plug? Sporting news, all that stuff?
Yep, sportingnews.com. I have a new column up. I put it up just after SummerSlam, talking about the show on there. Of course, my blog, rspwfaq.net or .com, whichever you want. I also write for insidepulse.com, too, if you want to check me out there. And you can look me up on Amazon and buy a variety of Kindle books. I'm actually going to be releasing a collection of the 1994 Monday Night Raw rants that I've been doing. I'll bundle all those up. If I ever finish logging through the god-awful 2006 Saturday Night's Main Events, I'm going to put together a new book of those as well for everybody on there. And, couple other things probably on there. I love doing Kindle books. They're easy and good for everybody.
Very good, very good. Of course, you can find Scott as well at PlaceTomination.com, where he's kind enough to let us run some of his stuff as well for some crossover. So, and thank you for all the help and pluggery over at your blog as well. Appreciate that, too.
Yep. No problem. Sorry that NXT has been so boring lately that I haven't been inspired to recap with you guys anymore. But
it's okay. We'll take what we can get.
Yeah.
All right. And Scott, we'll be back next Monday, WrestleMania 19. And then next Wednesday, we're kicking off a little something special. We'll talk about that on Monday night. So a little bit of shift in our schedule. We're going to be doing some cool stuff coming up. So, all right, for Scott, I am Justin. Everyone take care. We'll talk to you next Monday, WrestleMania 19.